This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, host Tina Dacom-Luke interviews inspiring women on This Is Who We Are.
Welcome. I'm Tina Dacom-Luke, and this is Who We Are. September is Gynecological Cancer Awareness Month, an important opportunity to spread awareness and raise critical funds for research and patient support. In years past, ovarian cancer was called the silent killer, but in reality, it isn't silent in all patients. Symptoms are known as a constellation rather than isolated symptoms. You can have perhaps some bloating, vomiting, nausea, back pain. It can be different for all. My guest today hit my radar when I saw a news article that stated that a Kiwi lady had taken out a billboard in Times Square. And I thought, that's my kind of lady and she sounds interesting. So I tracked her down and lucky for me, she was open to have a bit of a chat. So pull up a chair, grab a drink, get comfy, and I will introduce her to you after this. Hi Jane, how are you? It's lovely to have your time this morning. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tina.
So how did a Kiwi lass from down south end up with a billboard in Times Square?
Wow, that's a really good question. And I think it comes down to a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls, some quite sad stories and a really good cause. So we were very lucky to get it donated. It
yes.
was actually 18 metres long for World Ovarian Cancer Day.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, and so the purpose of the billboard was to raise awareness for Cure Ovarian Cancer, which is a charity that I founded that raises funds for research for a type of ovarian cancer called low-grade serous.
And what is it about that cancer that's different to others?
Yes, so ovarian cancer is an umbrella term. So there's one main type of ovarian cancer, high-grade serous, that accounts for about two-thirds of the cases. And then there are lots of other rarer types. So the type I had accounts for less than 10% of cases, and it's slower growing than high-grade serous, but it also tends to affect much younger women. So about half are in their 20s, 30s and 40s when they're diagnosed, and it doesn't respond well to chemotherapy. And unfortunately, the survival rates aren't very good.
So how would someone discover that they had that?
Yes, so ovarian cancer is, though there are lots of different types, they all have a similar presentation, which, as you alluded to, can be very varied. So the main symptoms that people can experience are bloating, abdominal or pelvic or back pain, feeling full quickly, frequent or urgent urination, changes in bowel habits, indigestion, unexplained weight loss or gain, painful intercourse, fatigue and menstrual irregularities. But obviously, as women, these symptoms, it's not uncommon, I guess, for someone to have some of these some of the time.
Mm.
But the important thing is if you experience them for 2 weeks or longer, particularly if they're unusual for you or they're getting worse, then you should go and see your doctor and ask whether it could be ovarian cancer and whether you should have any testing to rule it out. And I think it's really important to know that ovarian cancer isn't often diagnosed very well. For example, I had symptoms for well over 2 years before I was diagnosed, and I was going to my doctor and saying, I'm feeling really tired and my bowels have changed, mm-hmm. and this just doesn't feel right, and getting reassurances that it wasn't anything serious and we didn't need to do any investigations. And I saw a couple of doctors, so it wasn't just the one that I saw. Yeah. And so it's important to know that the awareness amongst doctors isn't always as good as it could be. There are certainly some amazing medical professionals out there who do a really great job, but it is one where there are some barriers to getting a diagnosis. So if you go and see your doctor and they say, oh, no, that's all right, it isn't anything, but you still, things don't get better and you still don't feel that things are right, it is really important that we tell women that it's okay and that you should feel that it's your right to go and get a second opinion or a third opinion until you're happy with that. And the tests for ovarian cancer, they're not crazy, weird tests. It's a blood test called a CA125, and that will detect half of all early ovarian cancers. And when done in conjunction with a transvaginal ultrasound, so an internal ultrasound, then that detects over 98% of ovarian cancers. And I guess an ultrasound, we do that on every pregnant woman, so yes. It's not a fun test, but it's certainly something that's pretty easy to have done. And it's important that if you think that you have some of those symptoms and they are getting worse, that you get them checked out, because ovarian cancer sometimes grows slowly, but sometimes it can grow really quickly too, and it is very hard to treat in most cases once it's spread beyond the ovary. So the survival rates, for example, for breast cancer, if you have stage 3 or breast cancer, you'll find your survival rates are over 3 times greater than someone with stage 3 ovarian cancer.
And what is it, do you think, in a symptom picture, perhaps especially for a younger woman like yourself, that would mean that doctors wouldn't naturally think of ovarian cancer?
Well, I think ovarian cancer is interesting in that, and I can say that speaking with my clinician hat on as a previous health professional, that it's something that doctors don't see lots of. It's a very common cause of female cancer death. But that's because the survival rates are relatively poor. It affects about 1 in 70 women in their lifetime. So it's something where doctors don't necessarily see a lot of it. And typically it does affect older women. But there are certain types of ovarian cancer which are much more common in younger women, like the type that I have. And about in New Zealand, 1 in 6, 1 in 7 cases of ovarian cancer will be in someone under the age of 40. So it is important to, I guess, be open to that possibility that it could be that. And it's certainly something where I would really like to see it being something that's ruled out rather than waiting until the symptoms become so overwhelming that it is ruled in as a diagnosis, because that really does. It really robs women of their best chance of survival if that happens.
So how would you like to see that implemented with upskilling doctors?
Yes, so at the moment, in addition to my work through Cura Ovarian Cancer, which focuses on the low-grade serous subtype and tries to raise funds globally for this cancer, we have worked in New Zealand with the other 3 organisations that are advocating for change and formed an umbrella group called Ovarian Cancer Aotearoa Coalition. And so as part of that, this year we sent letters to every politician. We spoke at Parliament on International Women's Day, and I started a petition with the support of these other groups to try and get some changes. So we're calling for greater awareness of ovarian cancer, because in New Zealand, when we did a survey of the New Zealand support group, 9 out of 10 women are like me. Before they were diagnosed, they couldn't name a single symptom of ovarian cancer, and there's no screening test. So a cervical smear doesn't detect ovarian cancer. So the only way to get diagnosed is to have symptoms and tell your doctor about those symptoms. So we're kind of setting women up to fail at that first hurdle. And the test can be difficult to access. There isn't great funding in the public sector, in particular for the ultrasounds. And so you sometimes, to get seen in a timely manner, are potentially better to go privately rather than publicly, and that also is a barrier in terms of being able to access testing. There aren't good clinical guidelines either in terms of the diagnosis, and so we don't have a universal, if someone comes in with these funny symptoms, there's not as kind of a tick box kind of guideline for doctors that this is what we do all the time in these circumstances, and the clinical guidelines can certainly make the process a lot better and ensure that you don't have people slipping through the gaps in the same way. We have issues with treatments. There are treatments that are available in Australia and Canada and the UK that are funded that aren't funded in New Zealand, and in particular clinical trials. We have really poor access to clinical trials in New Zealand if you have ovarian cancer.
Do you know why that is? That, because often for some things in the world we lead the world, but in this we seem to be lagging behind. You know, I'm just wondering, we're often in the same lane as Australia and Canada. Why aren't we with this?
Yes, well, that's a really interesting and complex question. I think it's something where the underlying reasons for it are quite complex, but yes, the solutions are probably easy. For example, for the clinical trial, since 2005, Australian women have had access to 139, but we've had just 22 in New Zealand, and it's partly that there's no incentive for DHBs to fund the nursing staff. If you're on a clinical trial, you need extra measurements taken, and they have to follow you closer because it's a study basis. And there isn't a lot of incentive for the DHBs to put that extra resourcing into it, even though the benefit from participating in clinical trials, it means women get access to much newer treatments. And some of those treatments, in addition to helping find new treatments and change the clinical course and improve things for women, some of them work really well. And so women, if they get on these clinical trials, sometimes women get access to treatments where it can give them a lot more time, or potentially mean that they're cancer-free, where if we have to wait through the system until all that evidence is collated and then Pharmac funds it, I mean, that can be 20 years or longer. And in particular in New Zealand, I guess, is the research issue as well, because the reality is we don't fund dedicated research for ovarian cancer, and like all the other areas of healthcare, it often does get overlooked. And part of that, I think, is that it is a woman's cancer, and it's partly, you know, we don't generally talk about ovaries in public.
That's so true.
And so it's something where it's not uncommon, you know, it wasn't that uncommon that long ago for women to refer to it as stomach cancer if they had ovarian cancer, because there was a bit of stigma around it. And I think all of those things can tie in and really potentially have held ovarian cancer back a little bit. But since 2018, we've spent about $500 million as a country on medical research, and none of that's gone to the fifth most common cause of female cancer death. And so the reasons behind that are all quite complex, but the solution is quite simple. We need the politicians to put priority on it, to give some Ministry of Health resources to ensure that women can access the test, to ensure that there is greater awareness around it, to make some changes so that there's more incentive for DHBs to bring clinical trials, to fund dedicated research so that ovarian cancer research does get funded and we can find new treatments. And so there is a petition and people can learn about those issues if they go to ovariancancer.co.nz, and it would be great if everyone could sign the petition, because that certainly would improve the situation in New Zealand. But I think the issue for ovarian cancer is we've got a New Zealand local context, but there's also a really global context as well. And so I think what I've talked about is a lot, but actually there's this whole bigger picture there as well. And so Cure Ovarian Cancer is really focused on the outcomes for women with low-grade serous ovarian cancer, because when I was diagnosed in 2017, I'd had these symptoms for over 2 years, and I'd been seeing my doctor and being told that everything was fine, and my life was pretty good. I had a wonderful partner. I just got offered this great job in Dunedin, and I was driving down the country, and I had a nagging abdominal pain, which had had on and off for about 5 months, so it started a bit later than some of my other symptoms. And instead of going away, it just got worse, and it got bad enough for me to be admitted to Christchurch Hospital when I needed emergency surgery. And unfortunately, they thought that it wasn't going to be cancer, and they told me when I woke up that it's great news, it's probably just a fibroid, I see it all the time, and it ruptured during surgery, but that's okay, and they'll get in touch in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And yeah, unfortunately,
that
when
wasn't,
they got in touch, it wasn't, and it was, this awful type of ovarian cancer. And when I pushed my oncologist for a prognosis, she told me that I likely had 5 to 15 years left to live. And when you're 32, that's not enough time.
Mm, you're just beginning.
Yes, and so the more I looked into it, the more I found that it was actually this huge issue. I think in New Zealand, we often assume that we might not be funding research, but surely people overseas are, for every rainbow and type of cancer that there could be in disease. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. And so I was an optometrist, and I was used to signing up and getting alerts when various optometry topics, when new research was published in it, on it. And so it was second nature to do that for my cancer too. And after a few months, like, surely I mustn't have set this alert up right, because there's something wrong. I'm getting 30 new papers a month are being published on short-sightedness, but it's saying that nothing's being published on the cancer, which is probably going to kill me. That can't be right. But I went in and I looked into it, and actually was getting about 20 papers a year. And to put that into context, there are about 13,000 papers a year published on breast cancer, for example. And so what that means is that progress is happening really slow, because when you get diagnosed with this cancer, it's not like you can say, well, this drug's working really well in this other type of cancer, I want to take that and try it. There's a whole process that medicines and treatments have to go through, and with research and clinical trials, because often these drugs and treatments, they might help, but actually they could make the cancer worse. And so that's why we often, we see kind of the end process of that research when we go into the doctor and they say, you've got high blood pressure here, take this medication. But actually there's been a lot of research and processes that have happened to get to that stage. And so the reality was that my cancer wasn't getting much research, and so I was like, right, I'm going to fundraise for this. I want to get my friends and family to donate and raise some money and help more research happen. And I was like, okay, so I need to find an organisation to give to.
Yeah.
And so I looked, and I went through all the organisations, and I looked at what they were funding, and part of the issue is that ovarian cancer organisations relatively aren't that well supported. So the largest ovarian cancer research organisation in the state raises a similar amount of funding as the largest breast cancer organisation in New Zealand does. And you think about the population difference between New Zealand and the States, and they're a heck of a lot bigger. So in proportion, even in the States, it's not getting much research for all types of ovarian cancer.
That's mind-blowing to me.
Yes. And so it ends up in this really hard situation where some types of cancer just get overlooked, and that wasn't good enough for me. I wasn't willing to wait and queue and say, well, it's okay that we just ignore this cancer for the next 50 or 100 years and then, you know, we'll work on it and find better treatments. I wanted to make sure that we were doing something now to improve the survival of it, because it's a pretty horrible cancer, and it kills a lot of really young women who deserve so much more life than what they get. And so I founded this charity. And I think when I started, it was really frustrating, because I was like, why has no one else done this before? Why do I have to be the first person to do this? Surely, you know, someone else would have thought of this. But the more I got into it, it's an awful lot of work and really difficult, and I realised this is why no one else has done it, but it's so important. And so I've dedicated the time that I have, and I don't know how much time I have left, but I do know that over 85% of women with my cancer do have it come back and ultimately succumb to it. And I've decided that I want to make sure that in 10, 20 years' time, women have better options. And if we're really lucky, maybe we'll find some research that will get better treatments in time for me, because I have a lot more life I want to live as well.
Absolutely.
And so I founded this charity, Cure Our Ovarian Cancer, and got the support of women around the world with this cancer, and organised other charities around the world to set up pathways so people can either donate directly to us in New Zealand, or they can donate through other organisations in the country that guarantee that that funding goes directly to low-grade serous. And we started to fundraise, and we've fundraised over 400,000 New Zealand dollars worldwide for low-grade serous research, which is amazing. It's really, it's a drop in the bucket compared to some cancers, but it certainly is progress, and it's very, very heartening to see that. And this is how we get new treatment.
It is.
By raising funds to have the research and have the researchers working in their laboratories.
And someone's got to have the courage.
Treatment.
Yeah. Someone's got to have the courage to throw that ripple in the pond. So for the listeners who are listening today, how can they best support you going forward?
Yes, well, in regards to the petition, if they want to go to ovariancancer.co.nz, there's a link on that website to the petition, and they can sign that and share it on social media, and that would be wonderful. We want to try and get as many signatures as we can. We've got over 3,000 so far. But for women with my specific type of cancer, the most amazing thing you could do is fundraise for and donate. And for September, we're running a campaign to step up for ovarian cancer. And so you can go to our website, cureourovariancancer.org. So cure, C-U-R-E-R-O-U-R, ovariancancer.org. And select New Zealand, and you can sign up to, we're asking people to just get active in September, so you can do a walk, you can do a run, whatever you want to do, and create a fundraising page and ask your friends and family and workmates to support you with that, to raise crucial funds for research to help find new treatments so women can live longer.
Such an important cause, and I really want to thank you for how courageous you're being, stepping up and being the face of this with what you're facing in your own personal journey as well. What I've heard you talk about today, I can see that there's a three-pronged approach here. There's the funding, there's the raising awareness for women and their families themselves around what signs and symptoms could be, and there's also educating the doctors. So there is a lot that could be done with this money that's raised in really important avenues. So thank you so much for what you are choosing to do. And I just take my hat off to you. And if there's anything I can ever do, I will do it.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is really to raise awareness of ovarian cancer, and that we need to be talking about it more. We need to be raising awareness, and we certainly need to be fundraising for it, because that's the way that we will see improvement.
Mm.
And so I think it's easy for people to think, to listen to this and think, that's an interesting story, and then go about their life and maybe forget about it, or think, that won't matter. But actually, for women with ovarian cancer, there isn't a lot being done. So actually, what individuals do does really make a difference.
Yes. Yes, it does. And I think when we all start talking about this amongst our friends, I think we'll be quite surprised to see who has been touched by this or has had someone close to them with it, because I think it is often not talked about enough.
Yes, that's really true. And I think it's easy to hear this and think, it's a woman's cancer. But the reality is we have siblings, we have parents, we're mothers, we're employees, we're employers. The ovarian cancer affects all sorts of people in society and can have a huge impact on everyone. It's not just women that it affects
society.
So many other people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there a member of parliament who this is under their portfolio, or they're taking this under their wing to run with as we're coming up to elections?
So in March we spoke at Parliament for International Women's Day, and there were MPs from various parties who came and listened to us speak, and the Women's Commonwealth Parliamentarian Group have given their support to the petition and are working hard to raise awareness and progress, and they were the ones who really pushed us to do this petition. And certainly one of the things with the petition, we're quite keen to see it made into an election issue. So Judith Collins is an ambassador for the Gynecological Cancer Foundation, and they've released gynecological cancer policy that addresses awareness and testing, which is a great start, but certainly we'd like to see a lot more done. And so we're really calling on all the political parties to address all the issues around ovarian cancer. And in particular, I guess my passion is for research, because research is really how you break this vicious cycle. It's
yes.
why breast cancer survival has more than doubled in about the last 40 years. It's how we target not just individual women and make their lives better, but it's how we make every woman diagnosed with this cancer in the future ensure that they all have good options and treatment. So I'm certainly really grateful for the politicians that have got behind this.
Jane, thank you so much for your time, and it's been an absolute treat to have this time with you today. I'm going to let you go and enjoy that beautiful day in Wanaka, and I'm just going to finish off here by stating really quickly that if anyone has the time or they want to get in behind this, please check out that website. Please look at what you can do. Follow me, see what I'm putting out there. Let's get in behind this and support each other and see what radical change we can actually make in this field. And kia kaha, Christchurch.